Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. Today, I'm excited to bring to you a guest who lives close to me. She is author Gloria Alden. Gloria writes the Catherine Jewell Mysteries as well as short stories and poetry. She lives on a small farm in Northeast Ohio with assorted critters, her collie Maggie, two tabby house cats, a canary named Pavarotti, who loves broccoli, two old African ringneck doves, two ponies, five rather old hens, and an old guinea fowl who patrols the grounds. Like Catherine Jewell, she enjoys working in her gardens and walking in the woods with Maggie. She is a retired third grade teacher, and every Thursday her blog is on Writers Who Kill. And I'm interested to learn more about this neighbor, so welcome to the show, Gloria.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here, too. So where in Northeast Ohio do you live?
It's a little township called Southington, Ohio. We have a general store, a post office, a gas station, several churches, and one restaurant on the corner of 422 and 534.
Oh, so we are fairly close. I live in Chardon.
Yes.
Yep. Where did you teach? What school did you teach?
I taught at Hiram Elementary School for 20 years. I didn't start teaching until I was 48. I didn't start college until I was 42. So a little late starting, but totally loved teaching third grade.
Oh, how excited. So you started college. You went to school at 42 to become a teacher.
I started a year after my oldest son died of cancer.
Okay. Wow, well, bravo to you. That's really something.
Well, and I was that strange student where most of them are younger and they're in the back seat leaning, you know, thinking about other things. Mm-hmm. And I was the one that sat in front with, woo, I know an answer, you know. I was terribly enthused about it, and I ended up taking overloads of literature, poetry, and writing classes.
That's so funny that you say that, and I think we both went to the same college, Kent State.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, this is funny. I can admit it now because I'm a mom, but I used to be annoyed as a student when we would call them the moms in class, always had to raise their hands and be real excited about everything. But
well, I can remember a history professor who, while he was lecturing, he would insert funny little comments that the younger people didn't catch on. And I was sitting there chuckling because he was funny, but they didn't catch on.
I love that. If only we had the enthusiasm and the interest as a mom when we were kids going to school. I mean, what a waste sometimes when I think about how I just sat there and zoned out when I really could have been learning. So, yep. It's wasted on kids sometimes. All righty. So you're writing mysteries. What genre do your books fall under? All mysteries?
It's kind of traditional or cozy. There's no graphic sex or graphic violence. Bodies are found. It's sort of like whodunit. You've got enough different suspects that you wonder who it was, and there's a little bit of romance gradually through it. So and they take place in Northeast Ohio, where I have lived all my life. Mm-hmm. Fictional town that's a composite of places like Chardon, Garrettsville, whatever.
No, I get that. So what made you decide to write mysteries? Why do you like to write mysteries?
Oh, I've loved mysteries since I was a kid, and I've always been reading them. And then one sister in particular, decided that when we retire, we needed to earn money, so we should write mysteries. Well, it lasted about 2 months. She didn't live close, the one that was writing with me. The other one only served us coffee. So after about 3 chapters, I took over and wrote by myself, and I love writing.
Aww.
In fact, I liked all my literature classes in college. I liked writing the research papers and essays. Mm-hmm. And so on.
Yep. Me too. I was serious about that as well. Now, your series follows a chronological pattern of the months of the year. Why did you decide to do that? And then give us the names of the book and a brief synopsis of each.
Well, the first one was The Blue Rose, which in reality, there's no such a thing. But in this book, there was a blue rose, and a very wealthy man gets murdered with a pitchfork in his back at a big reception honoring the blue rose that he said he had propagated, which nobody believed because he wasn't a true gardener. The covers are all designed by a step-granddaughter of mine, and they're beautiful.
Oh, they are beautiful.
And the dead body on the cover of that first book is my second son.
Oh, okay.
I asked him if he'd pose as a dead body because she couldn't find a good picture. And he said, okay, dressed up, and he went out, and he laid down, and I took pictures and sent him back. She put the pitchfork in his back, though.
Oh, my God.
It's a whodunit, and you really want to know, and Catherine gets involved simply because she works at this large public garden called Elmwood Gardens, which, of course, is not anywhere around here. And most of the suspects are people she knows and likes. And the police chief has been a police chief for 10 years, and he's never dealt with murder before, so he's feeling a little bit overwhelmed. But it all comes out well. And in the second book, it's July, so we have daylilies for the flower. And it's daylilies for Emily's garden. Emily is a recluse who was a scholar of Emily Dickinson, and she now is suffering from dementia and dresses in white and thinks she is Emily Dickinson, and she thinks her secretary companion is Austin, her brother. So that gets interesting. I do like to bring some things in that are, what do I want to say, kind of like bring in something that would be something like in this book, I bring in environmentalism.
Okay.
And also there is a mentally challenged young man.
Mm-hmm.
In the first book, it's kind of between the rich and the poor because there is also a poor woman who is murdered in the first book. The third book is Ladies of the Garden Club, and we have sunflowers for that one. And three ladies of the garden club are being poisoned by poisonous plants.
Mm.
So Catherine, who just taught a workshop on poisonous plants at Elmwood Gardens, is kind of suspected by one of the police chiefs that maybe she is involved. So we get that. We get a couple of elderly people. The fourth one is The Body in the Goldenrod, and it takes place with a Civil War reenactment in Elmwood Gardens, and it kind of deals with spousal abuse a little bit. And then we go on to October, and the picture there is Mums, I think. Yeah, Mums. And it's Murder in the Corn Maze. And a friend and I went to a corn maze one time. She couldn't go more than 10 minutes. She tired out. But I do research on that, too. And you dealt with several social issues in that one, too, that I won't go into detail. And the next one is Carnations for Cornelia, and that takes place in November. And we have it goes back to in Murder in the Corn Maze, a skeleton had been found in an underground railroad, and they thought maybe it was a runaway slave. But it turns out the skeleton's is only about 20 years old, and it's a young girl. So they're trying to find out who that is, and then somebody else gets murdered too. And the last one is my December one so far. And it's Blood Red Poinsettias, and it deals with Christmas and all kinds. And a lot of the love thing interests prior to this have built up, and there's more love in this book. more romance. But like I said, I don't go into describing.
Right.
You just have to imagine it.
That's the best kind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm working on my January book now. I'm not too far into it yet. So.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. What happened to January through April? So you started with June.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, January is going to be my eighth book, and I'm working on it, and it's Amaryllis for Phyllis.
Oh, I love that.
And, well, I'm looking at flowers, you know, for the month. I think February will probably be orchids. But so Catherine, who has a nursery in addition to working as a part-time botanist, things slide, you know, taper off in the winter months, but she'll be working in the greenhouse starting perennials and different things.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow. What an exciting concept. How did you even think to do this month by month?
Well, I started with June because I came up with the idea of the blue rose.
Uh-huh.
I know there can't be any, you know, such a thing, but in your books, you can do anything.
Exactly. It's your book.
Yeah. So I came up with it, and then I just decided to go by months because mm-hmm. if you're going to have a flower theme, which I wanted to do kind of, because mm-hmm. this is my wife protagonist is a botanist, and that incidentally my youngest sister lives in Seattle and she's a botanist, so
okay.
And her name is Catherine.
There you go, some connections.
Yeah. Yes, so. So, you know, sometimes when you read mysteries, something that takes place in such and such a month, and if you're, and then the next book is maybe 6 months later, and you wonder, well, wait a minute, what mm-hmm. happened to these people in between?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finding that a lot of people like my characters because a lot of them come back, and they start to think of them as friends.
Friends.
Well, they know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and I guess I do too.
I like that. Genius idea. Now, you're also, or you did write a middle grade book called The Sherlock Holmes Detective Club.
Oh, that was fun. I am a scammer. I told you I love third grade anyways. They still love their teacher and they're fun and you could joke with them. One day I brought in a suitcase and I told them I found it on my back doorstep. And I said I didn't want to open it home because, if anything, I wanted, you know, witnesses to see that, you know, I didn't take anything. So they were all excited. I opened this old suitcase, and there was a rabbit fur coat, thanks to my ex-mother-in-law. Well, she was already dead. But, and there was a white nightgown and just different things in there, a lottery ticket and a letter from somebody and so on and so forth. And they're so excited about it, and they're writing on. I had one little girl write on the board everything we found, and a little boy, one of the boys, ran over to the science center because I had a big science center. I'm really into that, and brought over magnifying glasses, and they were examining. Well, they found a white hair. Well, I have white hair. Anyways, so they couldn't figure out who it was. So I said I was going to put an ad in the paper and see if anybody, you know, lost and found. Well, I live in Trumbull County, and these kids are in Portage, so they wouldn't know anyways. So we got three letters, thanks to one of my best friends and a cousin of mine and one of my sisters. And it could only have been this one woman, and her name was Alice Van Brocken, because the others, I mean, they were ridiculous, their letters. And she said that she had gone to Cleveland to cash in her lottery ticket and to get this rabbit fur coat repaired, and she saw a falcon fly into an upper story window and come out with a diamond necklace and fly to these two guys who put it back in its cage, and she figured they were thieves.
Mm.
So she followed them to a nearby apartment house, and she followed them upstairs quietly and saw which room. And then she went to the police, and they did not believe her because she's an older woman and we're all senile, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she stalked them, or she watched them, and when they went to leave, she managed to get into their apartment and found a card to a ornithologist at Columbus State University. So she was, Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
So she was going to track them. She wrote them a letter, the kids a letter, and thanked them for finding her suitcase and yada yada, and she told them about it. And so I had the kids write letters to her, telling them about herself, their selves. Well, she gets on the track of these jewel thieves. In Columbus, she is mugged, thrown in a warehouse with the Falcon, and three big, huge cartons full of canned spinach and a can opener.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine what the kids would think about that? And so we didn't hear from her for a while because it took her 3 weeks to get out. When they took the Falcon, she knew that was it. She crawled through a vent and whatever. She escapes. But she found a clue that leads to the museum, the Earl... there's Isabel Gardner Museum in Boston. So she's going to head out. Well, the kids are just giving her all this advice. You need a gun. No, she writes back, she doesn't want a gun, to take a gun. They say, you need a police dog. They all have all these words of advice, or they just talk about it. I mean, as she's going around the United States, and she travels all around the United States on the track of these criminals, and she gets in trouble and so on, and the kids are writing to her. And these letters come directly to the school, unopened, postmarked from these towns around, Boston, New York, Washington, D.C., and so on, because I have friends or family all around the country. So they believe in her. And she knows karate. And one little boy talked her into getting a slingshot since she doesn't want a gun. So she uses that once, too.
Oh, my.
And she gets all these different costumes and different, different kinds of sunglasses and different wigs, everything. She almost falls down Grand Canyon from a mule when they slit her the cinch. And in Mammoth Cave or somewhere, one of the caves, the lights go out. If you've ever been in one, and somebody pushes her over and she just barely keeps from falling all the way down. So, but she does manage to get them arrested at the Space Needle in Washington State, Seattle. And then she comes to visit the kids the last week of school. And it was so funny because it was my sister who was in her early 50s, but they think everybody's old.
Yes.
And she came in with the judge, and I told Elaine, I says, now they're going to want to see karate because she's good at karate. And Elaine says, don't worry about it. So she comes in, she knocks on the door. I tell this little kid, Brandon, to answer the door, and he says, oh my God, it's Alice Van Bakken. And he comes back, and she comes swooping in, and she gives this lecture I told her they're going to want to see karate, and she says, don't worry about it. And so she tells them it's not entertainment. It's a discipline.
Oh.
Don't do it for show. And all of a sudden she lets out a yell and moves out her hand. She had a full skirt on. They all screamed. So it came time for recess. They have recess at that time. They had recess right before the buses came. They all lined up and wanted her autograph.
Oh, my gosh.
It's so precious. And the letters, like one little girl wrote, they would talk about things in their life. One little girl said, you sound like my grandmother, but you probably don't wear slippers and pass gas.
Oh, gosh.
I saved all these letters.
Oh, my gosh.
And I did it 7 years apart when I was sure there were no siblings. Give it away.
Oh, my gosh.
So I had like 46 kids. I narrowed it down to 6 girls and 6 boys, and that.
Oh, I love this. Sounds like you had a blast.
Oh, I had great fun. I love teaching third grade. They were so much fun.
Oh, well, it seems like they instilled some of that youth and energy in you as well.
Well, I don't know that I ever totally grew up.
There you go. That's okay.
I mean, I'm out with the kids catching insects in September. We studied insects in my room. You could hear the crickets and the grasshoppers, and we did the earthworm study for a week, and they wrote stories about their earthworm. They each had one at their... They don't know... And none of them ever knew that I don't like to pick up earthworms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you didn't want to pass that on to them, did you?
No,
I get it.
They examine them with magnifying glasses to see that they do have little fur, type not fur, but bristles. And then we had the great earthworm race on Friday, and, you know, my kids were in groups, which I changed every grading period, but it was the purple people, the green beans, the red hot peppers, et cetera. And so they would have, each group would put their earthworms in the middle of a circle in a big board. We had a construction thing, poster board. And then there would be a bigger circle, and they weren't allowed to touch it, but they would cheer their worm, you know, Slimy or Sam or Speedy or whatever name they gave their earthworm. And the first one that got out of the big circle would go on for the next group. They would have a, you know, runoff. So they did that, and we made cars, and we studied Henry Ford. They made their own little cars out of had assembly lines and things. I just had so much fun.
Oh, it sounds like you had fun. And that's a great time that you had. I'm glad you were able to go to school and get your degree and be able to take part in that and then offer what you had to those children. Now, you also write some poetry?
Yes. I wrote a few things when I was a teenager. And then I wrote an essay about my son's death, saying goodbye, and it wasn't, you know, it was quite sad. My professor, the first English, wanted me to put it in the Icon, which was the Kent State Trumbull campus little thing that they had put out twice a year. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote poetry, and it almost always got accepted. And then, not the first year after John died, but he was 18, almost 19.
Wow.
And so all kids are special, but you know. My first son,
yep.
My first child, I had four in less than 5 years, so I had my hands full.
Yep.
But he was a magician, he was an artist, he was a musician, he played the piano, he had a sense of humor, he was just, you know. So every year, not the first year, I picked one out of the Tribune's, whatever they had, but every year after that, and still do, I write a poem for him and have it put in the Tribune.
I love that.
So just for him.
Yep,
so,
a tribute.
But
yep.
But I write other poetry. I send it into the Ohio Poetry Day contest every spring in May, mm-hmm. and some have won, some just honorable mention, some don't. Are you familiar with the Ohio Poetry Day?
No, I'm not.
Oh, it's for Ohio poets or people who lived in Ohio once. They come from England, Australia, all over.
Oh, okay.
And there's like 29 different contests, like maybe Akron has one, and they're all put together, and for $10 you can enter as many contests as you want. And you don't earn a lot of money at that, but some of them pay a little more than others. They all have themes. So
interesting. I'll have to take a look at that. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. And anybody that's interested in this, they can contact it. The deadline for it is the 31st of May to get yours in. But you send all the poems, two copies, one with your name on it and one without. And you send it to one spot, the Ohio Poetry Day place, and you pay a total of $10. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
You can enter 20 of them, or 19, or 5, or whatever. So it's wonderful for those poets out there who don't know what to do with their poetry.
Exactly. It seems poetry is a little harder to sell and, you know, get people interested in as well. So any venue that you have, thank you for sharing that. Now, who are Writers Who Kill?
Oh, Writers Who Kill is the blog. There are 12 of us on it. They vary. Some people drop out and others start. I write every Thursday, and Warren Bull writes every Friday. And the rest of the people maybe will write every other week on a certain day, or once a month, you know, on a certain day. You know, so there's always some blog up every day of the week. And a lot of times it has to do with writing mysteries. And I just am going to post for tomorrow my 250th blog I've written.
Oh, my, you are prolific.
And naturally, you can't write 250 things, blogs about mysteries and writing mysteries or whatever. So I have a monkey brain. I jump around lots of different things. I have written about butterflies. I have written about climate change. I have written about, oh, just so many things, dogs, cats, whatever, you know. And my love of horses. I wrote about my dad for Father's Day. Anything that you, insomnia, I wrote about insomnia once, and or anything that I hear on NPR that piques my interest, I research, I'll go online and check things out.
Well, right, they say write about what you know and what affects you, so that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. And I know what's very important to you is your garden. So before we wrap up, maybe share your garden with us. You have over 200 daylilies?
Oh, at least.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, buried in weeds, a lot of them.
But they're there.
Well, there's just, you see, I'm single now. I was divorced, I don't know, 29 years ago? Anyway, something like that. And I bought this old house that was, two basement walls were collapsed. The roof leaked. The guy who, he had bought it the same year I was born, and he'd lived in it, and I don't think he painted it more than a couple times, and he died a few years before, and I bought 20 acres with it. I had two horses then and some chickens, so in the divorce, I got the horses, the chickens, and the house we lived in, I got half of it, and pop-up camper that I couldn't pull because I just had a little Honda. So, anyways, my son, I sold him 8 acres. He lives next to me. And he totally gutted this house and rewired it because it was wired in 1917. So he got it and rewired and fixed it up for me and everything. And he's done a lot of work for me since, but my horses, I had to sell them before I moved because I couldn't afford to put a pasture in out there. But anyways, I have I sold him 8 acres, so I have 12 acres, and I don't have anybody that tells me I cannot put in another garden. I don't have anybody tells me you don't need another rose bush.
Yay!
However, I need to win the lottery because I need 3 full-time park gardeners.
It is a big job, isn't it? It really
yeah,
is.
Yeah, and I mow by hand. I mean, with a push. I mean, it's a you know, power mower, but you don't ride on it.
Exactly.
You know, so. But yeah, I have these critters that I take care of in the gardening. And
that's so exciting! I'm so excited for you. That's a great way to live.
Do you have gardens?
Not really. We are on 6 acres, but right now I'm tending to 11 rescue cats, and I'm doing my work on the radio, so there's just so much of me. Now, in the past, when I was younger and my kids were younger, I did have gardens, but for now, no, just not enough time.
I hear you on that.
Yeah.
I deliver mobile meals every other Thursday. I belong to 2 writing groups. I belong to 2 book clubs.
Yeah, it's only so much.
Yeah, there's just so much you can do. Yep. And I have family, siblings and grown kids and grandchildren and great-grandchildren now. So
we'll just let those daylilies propagate by themselves wherever they want to go, right?
Well, yeah, they do. Sometimes I divide them in clumps and give them to people. Mm-hmm. It's not just daylilies. I have lots of roses. I have you know, I get enthusiastic. That's my big problem. I just get enthusiastic about things and don't stop to think, well, you don't really need another orchid when you see them on sale.
Oh, that's a good life. I don't think you need to stop that.
Yeah.
Well, now, is there anything we missed that you would like to talk about today?
I can't think. I discussed the reason that I really got involved in going to school and writing probably had a lot to do with my son's death.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be 36 years in October, and I always remember that day.
Yep.
Just the thing, the divorce I had was traumatic. It happened the same week that my father died that
oh,
I found out.
Gosh.
So whatever. But all these things that really seem like they're just going to totally get you down, you know what? Sometimes there are steps to a new world, a new life.
I like that. They make you who you are. And if you decide to react to them one way or the other, it makes all the difference in the world. So you are an inspiration to us. Where can listeners then go to learn more about you? And where can they purchase your books?
Because I am an independent publisher, which I'm quite happy doing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon, you can go to Amazon. If you live anywhere near Garrettsville, Ohio, they're in the Village Bookstore there. I donate them to local libraries, so if you just want to, well, I think they're in the Warren Trumbull County Library, and they're in the Newton Falls Library, and some of them are in the Bristol and the Howland and Cortland Library, but which they're connected, they can be brought in. So, you know, to me, I just like the readers. Do I make a lot of money at it? No, but some. Not enough to cover the printer ink and all the other things. But I write because I love to.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, like some writers who write series, they say their characters talk to them. You know, you sit down and you know where you're going, and the characters actually say what they want to say. So when you get to know them real well, and I have a lot of returning characters, so anyway.
Yep, I've heard that on many occasions. So your website is GloriaAlden.com?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I blog on Writers Who Kill, which is http://writerswhokill.blogspot.com, and that's on Thursdays.
Okay, writerswhokill.blogspot.com and GloriaAlden.com. Gloria, we need to meet. We're not very far, and this was such a pleasure to meet you this way, but maybe sometime in person.
I hope so. I would really like to.
Thank you so much for sharing you and your books and your gardens and just your wisdom with us today.
Well, thank you.